little throat clear right before we do this thing. Oof. That's not a good feeling. Fun weekend. Sun came out. It was boiling hot. Mm-hmm. Where you're just standing in the sun, you're going, no, this isn't right. How does it go from this to that? And now we're right back down to where are we again? But yeah, good weekend. Fun weekend. And some good sports. Stanley Cup playoffs finally started.
Mm-hmm. That was a playoff finals. For a week off.
I think the Panthers had 11 or 12 days off. And basically my big running theory is going to be that they're going to get smoked because they lost all their momentum.
Yeah, so you're in the rest versus rest debate. You've clearly got a side in that.
I think it depends on the teams, right?
Like when you're riding a heater like the Panthers were.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're beat up and your team is old and you can get the rest, like if it would have been the Tampa Bay Lightning and you've done it before and you get into a Stanley Cup final and you're way ahead of schedule and a bunch of your beat up guys can hit the ice tubs and have nice recovery time, you'll be all right. Mm-hmm. If you're an inexperienced team that's just rolling on a heater.
Yeah, rolling on like overtime wins and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's bad for them. And I even actually thought, so Paul Maurice is like the lead stand-up comedian in the sports world right now, right?
Yeah, he's killing it.
We should actually do this, like have a list of the guys who think they're the funniest, who have the most podium confidence right now. His podium confidence
rankings podium is a good one.
His podium confidence is right now is through the roof. It's off the charts.
He's stepping on that stage being like, they're here for me.
Yeah, like the guy who's pitching for the Blue Jays today, Alek Manoah, his podium ranking is usually extremely high. It's down in the bottom of the... it's at the very bottom. It's bad. Although, you know what is great about certain guys like him? He just needs one good start. And his podium ranking will go right back up.
He'll be talking smoke.
Yeah, exactly. He'll have one good outing, maybe tonight, and he'll be right back in the mix. Right back in the mix. But Paul Maurice right now is just holding court. He looks like a genius. He left that Winnipeg situation where it is obviously bad. Those guys, whatever those guys are doing over there to those coaches is bad, man. They're brats.
Yeah.
That's a brat house. I'll never forget. I will never, when anyone ever brings up Blake Wheeler's career to me, and he had a real nice moment, I will always just think about him whining about Rick Bowness's frustration and saying it shouldn't have been public. Like, okay, man. You guys dogged it in another series.
Yeah, your less coaches, mad that you got smoked and you more guys, mad just that your coach said something.
You guys are on the verge of killing yet another coach. And you no-showed in the playoffs. And, yeah, you're upset. That's why you're upset. Tough.
Everybody's in breeze.
Yeah. Maurice left that, though. Goes to Florida.
Yeah.
Inherits what is actually probably a team that's a little bit better than we gave them credit for, and now he looks like a genius, and that's why he's at the podium. And he's already a high podium ranking guy. People say he's just, well, I don't even need to see people say. You've seen it when he was here in Toronto. He is an incredible public speaker.
Yeah.
He's a great motivator. He knows how to do it. He's awesome. Kind of the opposite of Eric Spoelstra yesterday, where he tried to murder Ramona Shelburne in cold blood.
Poor Momo.
By the way, I got to tell you, when that happens, and for those of you that don't know, last night, Ramona Shelburne went to the podium and asked how they had success, something along the lines of how they had success turning Jokic
into more of a scorer rather than a passer.
Yeah, a playmaker.
Yeah.
And he said that's the uneducated eye. And okay, here's the thing. I actually know what Spo was trying to say there, which is Nikola Jokic dictates the game so well and they don't want to give them any motivation. And yeah, he's just trying to shut it down and say, and I actually kind of agree with him that Denver really needed Jokic to score in moments of that game. Their offense was just flat. Porter Jr. had a horrific night. Mm-hmm. Jamal Murray started cold. They didn't get their outside shooting going. Like, there just wasn't a lot happening for them. And Miami played really good defense. And so Jokic decided, you know what, I'm going to attack a bit more. Mm-hmm. So he's just saying, hey, this guy's a beast. We weren't really doing anything. We're trying to focus on our defensive principles. But as someone who has had limited time in scrums, but has done them, there is nothing more heartbreaking than when you try to ask a question and someone just eviscerates you like that. I have had some dumb ones. I remember I asked Blake Griffin point blank after they had lost to the Raptors, gotten embarrassed. It was the first Rudy Gay game where he came to the Raptors, went, covered that one, and it was right before the NBA All-Star game, and the Clippers lost by like 20 points. It was a blowout. No. And the Raptors fans were going nuts, new player acquisition. The Clippers were a pretty sexy team at the time. I'm in the locker room. I'm looking. I'm like, wow, it's Grant Hill, you know, ice in his knees. Old man Grant still grinding out here. And then I went up to Blake Griffin, and he was just sitting there, the Adonis. And I go, what would be your advice to Terrence Ross in the slam dunk contest? It wasn't good for me. I got Ramona Shelburne.
Please tell me someone recorded that.
Oh, I recorded it. I had.
Where is it?
What do you mean someone recorded it?
No,
I just went
footage
in there to shoot it with them, Joe. I had no equipment.
No, I mean, like,
just
please tell me someone recorded it and didn't delete it.
No, it's, I honestly, it was, yeah, it's probably gone. It might be somewhere, but yeah, no, it was not a fine moment. Her question I thought was valid, and she got shot down, so that one hurts even more. But yeah, it's like, even when you know what that person's doing, mm-hmm, getting shot down in front of everyone, there is just an embarrassment of it because no one wants to feel like a casual in what we do, right? There's this like weird, it's not weird, but clearly the people that are in it know way more than the people that are on the outside of it. That's why we're going to have Christopher Stieg on in a couple minutes. It's like he played, he won cups, and so he has a better perspective on a lot of this stuff than you do. But when someone calls you out and says you have a casual eye and this is what you do for a living, that's not good either.
That hurts.
That doesn't feel good. That doesn't roll off the back. Just like, it's fine.
Shake that one off.
I feel totally okay about this. Does not feel good. Anyways, I do want to get in some final thoughts before we talk to Versteeg. But first, quickly, and I'll do some more Jays, obviously. But, man, huge turnaround for a team that was just looking flat and lifeless and, I said, boring last week. They were boring. And, listen, there were some clutch at-bats in this series. Yesterday was the first game where you went, okay, finally, nice, like, way to actually work some runs. That Senga guy on the short rest did not look very good. They kept going, the fork ball. And I went, you mean the ugly pitch that dives into the dirt that no one's swinging at? Wow, what a player. What a pitch. Ooh la la. Oh, this guy where it's hard contact every single time he tries to throw it over the plate? What a sensation. Yeah, I guess he's been better. They flashed good stats. I saw a guy who was struggling against the Blue Jays. But yeah, big weekend for Vladdy in terms of just getting it going. Hits a bomb, has a game winning run. Looks good.
Yep.
Just, you know, I do think that he's more of a confidence player than we realize in a sport where it's not supposed to be that way with great hitters, where you go, oh, don't worry, you're going to come out of this slump. His slumps just seem to last a little longer. And I do think that him starting to get a little hot, him seeing the ball leave the yard, him having a productive weekend is going to be good for him because, man, it was getting pretty ugly here. Like, it's hard to find sluggers of his caliber who will put up statistics like the ones he put up last month where you go, oh, actually, he's one of the worst hitters in baseball when he's 0-2. He's actually swinging at more outside of the zone pitches than any guy or any time during his career. He'll just accumulate these numbers that you go, man, why is he doing this for this long when he's this kind of a hitter? And I do think that he wears a lot of it. He feels some of that pressure. And you wouldn't really think that given his pedigree and given his childhood and all these different things about him. But yeah, I just, all sports are confidence and feeling locked in, obviously. But yeah, some of those guys are better at regulating that. That's why clutch exists, right? Mm-hmm. Although his clutch stats are through the roof this year. He's hitting over 400, I want to say, with runners on in late game situations. Ah, damn it. I should have saved the stat. Chris Black had it. It was good. I went, interesting. He's hitting better than Bo Bichette in some of these late game situations. Anyway, good weekend for him. Really good weekend for Brandon Belt. Mm-hmm. Who's totally come around.
Yeah.
I thought the first month of Brandon Belt, I went, listen, I know this is baseball and this is where bad takes live is the first month, but Belt looked like a guy who was completely washed out of the league.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'd like the power numbers to be better, even though he did have a home run this week and a big one yesterday. But ultimately, yeah, just the guys getting on base. And I love his patience at the plate. Mm-hmm. He never looks like you're dictating to him. He does struggle at times with the high heat. Seems pretty clear that he doesn't turn on those and like really punish teams too often, but nice to see him get extra base hits. And now I feel confident with him at the plate. Varsho looks like he's coming around a little bit. Some hard hit balls. Just love the way that he runs down the line on ground balls. I hate how much
he's like
I
a
love
tank.
Him. I know. He's just a beast. He runs down the line so hard. Did you see the one this week? Yesterday where looked like he was going to tear his knee up trying to beat a ground ball to first.
He's like leaning all the way.
Yeah. I went, I don't think your knee's supposed to bend that way. And then Witt looked good. So, yeah, better results from a team that has a good on-base percentage, good, decent OPS. Like, the offensive numbers have been there. It's just, for those of you that feel as though this is a regression thing with runners in scoring position, and that's been the real bugaboo for them, then yeah, like a lot of merit to what you're seeing this weekend. So yeah, hopefully this actually continues, and they really need Manoah tonight to have just a decent,
just have
a decent outing, Alec. Turn things around
a little bit.
Please.
Okay, so I mentioned the nice move for Paul Maurice. What's the move for the Leafs and their coaching? It's a little weird, right? Day by day, gets a little longer. Now we get reports that Trey Living said 2 meetings with Sheldon Keefe, and still we don't have an announcement. I don't really understand. Anyways, Chris Versteeg, 2-time Stanley Cup champ, inventor of the Clever app, which is excellent if you've got kids in sports. If you're involved in youth sports in any way, I suggest that you go to the App Store and you download it for free. Check it out. Chris, what's up, buddy? How are we doing?
Wow, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been.
It's been a long time.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah.
You do a lot of things.
I was getting worried during that Toronto run that you're downgrading me to your 3rd or 4th most valuable guest, but I guess I'm here.
4th. You guessed correctly. It was 4th. So, first of all, before we get into some of this stuff, what did you think about the Trey Living hire? Because you're a guy who actually knows him.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. And right away, from, you know, the second Shanahan said he wanted an experienced guy, Tree was one of the guys on the market that I first thought about. Obviously, we'd texted back and forth about it. But for me, you know, you need someone in here who's going to be stable. You need someone who's going to make calculated moves. Again, sometimes Tree's had some good moves. Sometimes he's had bad, just like every other GM in the league. But he's also been a guy that's been through the ringer, and he's understood what it's like to deal with star players going into big contracts, what to do. And this is a guy that I think has set up well for this situation. So it made a lot of sense for me. Again, I personally really like Tree. He's very upfront. You know, I've dealt with him for 2 years in Calgary near the end of my career. So he's a guy who's very upfront. He's going to be honest with you. I think he gets a little bit of the business acumen from his old man, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's done pretty well in his business life. So I think there's that there. So it's a good fit now coming in and putting his, you know, pulse on the team and maybe starting to steer it in a slightly different direction than it was going. So it can go where it needs to go. I'm hoping Tree can do it. And I think at the moment it's a good start. Now what to do with the coach, you know, you're kind of touching on that, and we're going to get into that, what I believe. But I think overall it's a great hire.
Yeah, this is the weird one for me. I like the hire, too. And even when I was going through, once they were getting ready to announce him, you spend a lot of time deep diving into the moves, right? And for me, I actually think that he's a little underrated. I don't think that he clearly hasn't won. He hasn't had some massive team that ended up in a finals. But the Calgary group he put together a season ago was really formidable and had some very, very bad breaks come playoff time, and most notably that they ran into Connor McDavid as he played the best he's ever played in his entire career. And, yeah, they collapsed in that series. And Draisaitl was amazing, too, even though he was on 1 foot. So that just broke him. But if you go through his GM track record, he's had some pretty incredible drafts, better than ones where it was just abysmal and you went, oh, my God, this is horrific. Like, some of the guys in the value spots that he's taken them in have been terrific. And I know that's a staff effort, but even still, he oversaw that. He made sure that those picks happened. You look at the free agent signings. I've said this a million times. It's really, really hard in the NHL to point to guys in their either late, like getting that big contract in your late 20s, early 30s, that turns out to be a real hit. But at least he moved off of them. If, like, people gave Kyle Dubas credit for some of those moves where they would go, oh, he signed Nick Ritchie, but then he moved off of him really quickly, or Mrazek, and he didn't pay too big a price. That's the way I look at stuff like the James Neal trade, or sorry, signing, where I go, hey, at least he was able to move off him, and Lucic did actually have a better impact there than Neal was having. Not ideal, but something that's solid. You look at, yeah, some of the value that they have found with those teams have been quality. He just got, ultimately, what really, really hurt him was he had 3 players in Goudreau, Tkachuk, and Adam Fox that just didn't want to be in Calgary. And if those 3 guys all buy in there, then I've said this already, but I don't think that he's the GM of the Maple Leafs today. I think that he's probably still there. Some really tough coaching stuff between the start with Bill Peters and kind of having to them skimp on head coaching hires. Like, I think he's a little snake bit at times in Calgary, and that if you look at the overall body of work, it's really, really quality.
Well, yeah, and you're talking about coaching hires, and the issue you have with the Calgary Flames is the budget you're given to hire quality coaches. So you like Brad again? He would not have been given the budget, I would assume, to go out and get a Gallant in his prime, or a Peter Laviolette in his prime, or a lot of these coaches that were at the top. Again, Daryl lives near there. I'm sure he got a very average to below average salary just to come back. Peters was kind of one of those guys that, you know, still wasn't near the top of the paid coaches, but he, you know, he was working with a certain, you know, structure budget, probably, is my guess, and knowing I played in Calgary, how much they're allowed to spend on coaches, and able to, you know, put that forth towards a good coach. Again, Gully comes in, Gully's a low-paid coach, and, you know, he gets a pretty good team, brings them to the playoffs, and then something happens with him, and then the whole Peters thing happens. So he also had to deal with a lot of, you know, turbulent times there, and I think he deals with them well. And again, with the budget he was given, it's a lot different than what he's going to be given now. You know, I look at Kyle Dubas, how much money did he hide to circumvent the cap? Again, it takes a smart person to understand what to do, how to hide money, how to, you know, put dollars here or there to break up, to make dollars in the other area. And Kyle Dubas had that, but he also had a team that would back him and take on money and get rid of money and do certain things that they needed to do in order to make their team better, hire better coaches, fire a $6 million, $7 million coach who's getting private flights across Canada every day, and Babcock to bring in his own guy. You know, and put, you know, build out the nutrition team and build out everything. Like, these are things you're not allowed to do in Calgary, where in Toronto, there's a blank check. And it's like, however you think we're going to win, spend the money and do it. So it's a much different thing. So I always like to see how to, you know, how do GMs act? It's what's that guy who was the Oakland A's GM who did all that stuff, right? Well, Billy Beane has a minimum budget. Again, everyone has a certain budget with the team, but also the team within the team, the trainers, the staff, the nutritionist, the GM, the coach, everything else matters as well. Not as important as the players. The players are by far the most important. But that's the other piece to this, that, you know, when you're with the Leafs, it's a blank slate. You spend whatever you need. When you're with teams like Calgary or Winnipeg, the budget shrinks, and what can you do with inside that extra budget that you have on top of the players? So, again, I thought he did a great job. You know, he brought in good players. Did they win? No. Did they have some, you know, crap times with having a couple players having to leave? Yes. He dealt with it. He moved on, and he brought some other good players back.
You know what, though? That's what I've been sitting with for the weekend, is there's a couple things. One is that I like him as a GM. I think the body of work is decent. It's just that the situation he's entering in, it's really hard for me to envision that stamp, like what he's actually going to be doing here. And I talked about this last week, but this isn't a Brian Burke hire, right? Where he came down and he went, we're looking for truculence, and you felt like the organization was shifting and changing, or when they brought in Lou Lamoriello or even Dubas, that this is more of a, hey, you need a steady hand at the wheel right now as things go awry. And so it just doesn't feel like anything is really within his control at the moment. Like, he's not going to even be able to sit at the draft table. Right now, it feels like Shanahan is going to be calling the shots. They're going to be figuring out what their staff looks like. He's going to be a part of, I think, helping that process. But in terms of, hey, he's coming in here to take some big swing or some big move, I don't get the impression that's what's happening here. And that's why when people are freaking out going, oh, they're just going to bring the core back, they're just going to run it all back, I'm going, I mean, what option do they have right now? Like, what is the goal? I think if you're going to say truthfully about tree living and maybe what he learned, because that's what everyone keeps asking, it's like, what did he learn from the Calgary situation? What did he learn from the Calgary situation? What I think he learned is that when your star players dictate that they want out, it's hard to get great return, you know? Yeah. It's hard to move a star player under duress and turn that into a winning trade for you. Like, he's actually done okay, the Dougie Hamilton one specifically, where you went, oh, okay, that was a good trade for them. Like, you know, getting him in there. But, man, Tkachuk, you're not going to win that trade. It's tough. You can't let just guys walk without any actual understanding of where they're going, or you can get Goudreau'd. And so, really, what did you learn, Brad? It's like, you learn that the Stars control more than people don't talk about NHL stars the way they do NBA stars, because there's way less player movement, right? Where historically we know guys are going to re-up. Historically we know stars are going to take a little bit of a haircut if they want to end up winning. And now it feels like in the two situations he's in, they're just very different. These guys are exerting their star power, the Tkachuks, the Goudreaus, the Matthews, the Marners, potentially the Nylanders, that we're just entering a bit of a different era with some of these players.
Yeah, and again, the biggest thing for Brad coming in is seeing Nylander and seeing Matthews as the two next guys up and getting the job done. Like, how much value do you see on the backside of their career? Again, they're not on the backside of age, but again, if you're going to give these guys 6-7 years, what's the value of that? Go out, get the deal done, right? Don't wait until you have to, like Goudreau. I think that's the biggest thing he's learned probably from the Goudreau. And then again, the Tkachuk. Tkachuk didn't really want to be there anymore. He wanted to go back to the U.S. and do a U.S. market. And that's what happened. So he dealt with it. But you're right. When the players have that much power, which I love, it is very, I love it. It is so very hard to make trades and really get the return that you're going to need. So again, looking at the entire body of work that he's done in the past and how he can bring it here, he has past experience. I think it'll help lend him to it. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing, again, we talked, like when I brought up at the start, the biggest thing I would like to see him do is a coaching change. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking about a coaching change for a while. I do think Keith is a great coach. I think he's a great coach. He's not the best. I think he's got a lot of things he's got to learn in order to get the team over the hump. And that comes from changing things up, doing different things, tactics, better, you know, setups, whatever it may be. I could go throughout the entire structure of his game plan. I think they need to change the coaching because over the years, it still hasn't changed when it's mattered the most. Mm-hmm. Again, I go back to game 3 100 times. You start game 3 with your third line on the ice. You leave them on an offensive zone. Then they get hemmed in their zone for a minute. You know, just things like that constantly that he hasn't changed from the first power. Or playoffs he's played in. So I look at coaching as where Brad is really going to have to make his stamp. If he doesn't, then respect the choice that he's made, see what happens, and then critique Brad later on, depending on what Keith does with this team. So, you know, again, people talk about the other pieces around the team. What can he do there to fill holes, maybe around more his vision of what the team should look like? I don't think that's always what's going to change what has to happen at the top. And that comes from the coach. And that's why I think the biggest change is needed is the coach.
I agree. I don't think Keith should be back. I think that when the series ended, the thing that I said was, oh, the only guy that guaranteed is gone is going to be Keith. The way that I'm having a tough time with this one, though, because so they're paying him, right? And I know you just said that they've got an unlimited budget. But I do wonder if they're saying to themselves right now, okay, hey, we do have unlimited budget. We'll let this guy go, but show us the alternative. Show us the option that you want to bring
Patrick
in here.
Patrick Roy.
Okay. Patrick Roy, that's what you want to do?
I would do it tomorrow. Yes, I would do it today. And I'm not even kidding.
I don't want the Montreal stink in Toronto. I'm not even kidding.
I know.
Why?
But I watched him coach a game yesterday. His team was dialed in. He's got those, again.
He's an awesome junior coach, and he loves the Ramparts.
I get it. This team, the players now are a little bit different mm-hmm. than they were when he last coached. I think he's learned what he needs to do at the NHL level in order to be successful. When he came in, I remember playing against Colorado when he was coaching. He had this hardcore man-on-man system, and we'd play against them, and we would take advantage every time, because it's like you can't play strict man-on-man to that degree in the NHL or you're going to get just taken over all over the ice. And then his second and third year, he started to go to a bit of a hybrid. You could see yesterday in that junior game, he has a new kind of hybrid defense, which it seems to be working at that level. But I look at Patrick of how he was, you know, he has Simon Gagné now on the bench, you know, running the power play. It sounds like he's the guy who runs the power play. Patrick comes up the 5-on-5 in the structure and obviously who's going out on the ice. So, I'm going through like all these coaches. Who is it? Gallant, Laviolette. I texted you earlier on. Who'd be a good guy? You know, Patrick Roy. I think would be Waugh or Roy, whatever you want to go by.
I go by the right way to say his name. He's one of the greatest players of all time. I try to throw a little respect, unlike you, Waugh. I guess. Yeah, Waugh.
Well, my middle name's Roy. So
yeah, okay.
Anyway,
I don't think that they are taking the shot from you. You know, like they're not like, yeah, what does Christopher Steve call it? Oh, actually, that's the right way. No, he's Waugh. He's Patrick Waugh.
Patrick Roy.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm vouching for him.
Yeah.
I want him here. And he dictated the terms on the ice all game against Seattle. That Seattle coach didn't know what was going on. He got out-coached, outclassed, everything. The team didn't even look ready. So I'm watching that game, and I start to think, why not Toronto? Mm-hmm. You know, is this a place for him? A guy who's not scared of pressure, He's a Hall of Famer. He's gone to the NHL. He's been back to junior. He understands what it takes. And he maybe if a guy like Simone Gagné comes with him to help him more on the offensive end and whoever they want to bring as the defense coach, that I start looking at that as a great fit. Again, listen, I don't know if that's going to happen. And you talk about Montreal and Toronto, yada, yada. Yeah. But I'm looking for a guy who's not scared of the pressure, who could come in here, could lead a team, who's got a personality. I think the fans would rally behind him. And he's someone that, you know, understands what it takes. So, again, just looking at all the coaches out there right now and someone, oh, who's not better than Keith? This guy's better than Keith. Okay. I guarantee it.
So this is a really interesting thing. I wasn't prepared for this at all. And now I kind of need to go down this rabbit hole of just kind of playing it out. To see him wearing Toronto Maple Leafs gear, like to see him in the Sheldon Keefe blue and white zip up, Patrick Roy sitting on the Leafs bench, standing on the Leafs bench, it would be the weirdest. I think it would, my brain would never accept it. I would be fully staring at it every single time going, this makes zero sense. I genuinely think that he has to have some love in his heart for, like, he's still, of course, like Quebec and he cares about Montreal. He has to. And doing that would be such a knife in the gut of that fan base and that city that I actually don't think that he would do it. I really don't. But
remember, he's in Quebec, not Montreal.
Yeah, yeah. I just even, you think that people in Quebec root for the Leafs? All those Rempart fans are like, what's going to happen with Matthews? No, buddy, that is not what's going down. I hope he stays with the Leafs. No, that's not it. That's not what it's going to be. I don't think he would do it. I get what you're saying, and there is there's some sense to it. I just do think that right now, the reason why the Keith thing to me makes some sense is it's just the stability of right now trying to say, hey, things are calm, things are all right. And you bring in like a huge personality like Patrick Roy, and then it's like, holy crap, what is happening here? All of a sudden, those players looking around going, wait, what was the whole thing with the players last time? This is a dude who's got a big-time temper, big-time winner, big-time personality. Now you've got a new GM, and you've got a coach that's like that, that wants to, make an impact as well. I don't know. It just makes it, to me, feel like that's too much too soon. And this
you
is
might
what I
have
hate.
A year. You might have a year or two to do it.
But
you might have a year or two to do it.
This is why I think the move is to keep Keefe, is that it's just like, or why I think it's going to be keeping Keefe, is that you don't have to make, you're kind of kicking the decision down the road a little bit here. If he starts off poor, guys like that are still going to be there where you maybe offer them the big coaching job. And I texted you this already. I don't think that Quenneville to Toronto is going to happen flat out. Like, I just think that the market here is not where if he gets reinstated, he's going to want to be where every single day his past is going to end up following him around. Like, it will never be gone here in Toronto. Like, it just won't. Even with wins, it'll still be a big-time story. But it's something like that where you buy yourself time to go, let's find the right coach for this team. Let's find the right next coach for this team because we're not going to be beholden by Sheldon Keefe. He's got a good regular season record. The guys like him. Roll it back. The money's already on the books. And let's just buy some time. Like, I don't mind the raw idea. I really don't to some degree. It's just that it doesn't feel like there's a lot of guys out there where I'm chomping at the bit going, you got to make this change. Even though I agree with you that ultimately he doesn't feel like a great choice to bring back, especially considering what the future of the playoffs would look like for this team.
Well, the reason I'm not in, like, I don't love that idea is because if you fire a coach, again, we've talked about it, it has worked in the past with Pittsburgh where they fired Michel Therrien and then they bring in Bilsma and he comes in and he takes this team to the Stanley Cup. But yeah, I just like getting a coach in fresh at the start of the season, brings in his intensity or whatever he needs to do to that team, brings in his culture, brings in maybe a couple of his players to round out the team. Maybe there's a player that, you know, Patrick Roy would have that Brad didn't think of or that he needs in his ingredient to make his team work. So I like when it happens early on. And again, from a player standpoint too, it's nice when you can come to a team at camp and not halfway through the team. I've done both. It's really hard to come halfway through the team and put your culture and put your stamp on a team.
Definitely.
And the Bilsma thing was a bit of an anomaly. And then, so again, we go back to Keith. So Keith has a great regular season again. Mm-hmm. Most likely will happen with the team still around, with the pieces that may get added. Most likely still will happen. Okay, now you're in the playoffs again. You're out round one. You're out round two. You know, you like I look at last playoffs, and you know, Tampa Bay should have won Game Three. I know they didn't. They didn't. Tampa Bay should have won Game Four. Like the Leafs didn't play great to win that first round either. So if you're looking at that, they just they got Matthews. Like the Tampa Bay Lightning got Matthews in that one game, and then in the other game, right, the guys picked up and scored timely goals, but they didn't play great. They didn't play like hockey where I'd be like, wow, they just dominated the Tampa Bay Lightning, or they should have won that series. They won it, and then they go against Florida, and it was a complete licking. I don't know how else to put it. So, again, you get to the playoffs with Keith. You're in this situation again. You go out round one or two. Now what do? Do you fire him next year?
Yeah.
Or do you just because you had a great regular season, do you just keep going back?
No, he'd be gone. I think, honestly, dude, I really do believe that had Dubas stayed, Keefe wouldn't be the coach.
Well, I would have kept Dubas.
Sure.
Over Keefe.
Yeah, I think that they would have, too. It's just that it's pretty clear there was a real deterioration between Shanahan and Dubas, and that it became an untenable situation, and that... you were talking about, hey, the Leafs have a blank check with money. They would have paid Dubas. It doesn't appear that it was money. It was that the way he negotiated really cost him. That they basically approached him.
He's in the media.
That's it. Like, exactly.
He's talking like, if I'm going to come back. I mean, he shot himself in the foot. Unless he understood he had a deal somewhere else. Allegedly.
Come on.
Speculation, right? But
dude, can I say something about this quickly? I need to get this off my chest because I've been sitting with this for a while. There's a lot of Dubas defenders that keep telling and yelling like about the him going to Pittsburgh situation and going, well, he was fired. So what did you expect? His quote was, you won't see me pop up next week somewhere else. And then it was, I'm either going to be here or I'm going to be reflecting on what I've done in the past. I can't put my family through that again. And then he ends up in Pittsburgh and they go, well, it's because he was fired. And I'm like, well, what? Yeah, that was one of the scenarios. Why would it change all of a sudden the reasoning that he gave just because he was fired? It makes absolutely no sense the way that people interpret this as though, man, he knew he had the Pittsburgh job in his pocket. He negotiated that way because he knew he would be a commodity somewhere else and that Pittsburgh was hot to trot for him for forever, man. I'd heard his name about Pittsburgh. I don't even know. I'm not an insider, dude. I heard that stuff months and months and months ago that they were really, really invested in trying to get him and they gave him everything to be there. So it seems pretty clear that those things were true. They made him the president immediately and gave him 7 years. Like,
do you know what the word to me that gave away that there was possibly something prior to this and where he is?
Yeah, hit me.
Streamline. He wanted to streamline the Leafs organization. And how do you streamline? You just go to the top. You become the president of the team. That's it. And he is now the president of Pittsburgh, obviously in the hockey ops. And that's how you streamline. Now he doesn't got to go to a president in order to get board approval or to get Fenway's approval. He is the top. So to me, when I heard the word streamline, that basically just says I need to either be at the top or bypass the top in order to get to it, in order to make faster decisions. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, so that to me, when I heard, you know, Elliot Friedman come out and talk about streamline and everyone's talking about streamlining the process, and then all of a sudden he goes to Pitt, and he wasn't hired as the GM. He's hired as the president.
Yeah.
That's how you streamline. You go to the top.
Well, honestly, good for him, but I'm just so tired of people going, oh, he would never have negotiated to the media. This was just purely a play for his family, and he was fired, so he changed it. It's like, this is not a sympathetic figure, okay?
Well, then three people got fired within, like, a day.
He made a power play. He knew he had some leverage. He made his move, and it didn't work here, and now he's somewhere else. It's fine. But the whole thing about, he was never going to pop up somewhere else was, obviously BS. It has nothing to do with the fact that he was fired. He knew that this was there. Anyway, okay, so we touched on all those things, and, we'll probably be discussing them it's going to get weirder and weirder, the Keefe stuff, as time goes on here. I will say that, you know, now reports are that they've met twice and still there isn't some announcement that he's 100% back as the coach. It's especially strange, too, because I think if he comes back, there's just about, this might bite me in the ass. This is going to be a soundbite if he does get an extension. It's hard for me to envision him getting an extension. That's the thing. Like you mentioned it where, hey, well, what happens if he has another good regular season? He loses in the playoffs and then now you have to move off all that money? No. That doesn't make any sense. They're going to tell him, you got to be a lame duck coach too. And I don't know how that's going to sit with him. I don't know how that's going to sit with Tree Living. I wonder if that's what's kind of holding this thing up. But the longer this goes, the weirder it is. That said, Before we talk about a little bit of this Stanley Cup Finals, what do you think about Babcock coming back to Columbus? Babcock back.
Oh, boy, you should just take the Mike Commodore Bodog Canada reel, stuff it in right now, and let's hear what Commie has to think.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. We don't need to hear it because we know what it is. He's been pretty on the record. You know what would actually be the craziest thing ever is if he just completely didn't about face on that. If he just, that would be the biggest pod ever, is if he just sat down and went, you know what? I talked to Mike and we've buried it. You go, what? You know, that would be huge if him and Babs got in one. But yeah, that's not.
Or if he became the forward coach or D coach.
Oh man, that's too much. That would be selling out. That would be all credibility gone. He could never do that. Like, all of a sudden he's in Columbus, he's happy as a clam, just being assistants to Bab. No.
Yeah, wearing his robe on the bed.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
I'm not shocked. You know, he's a good coach. He's a great coach. He's done a lot of things in the past. He's had some interesting tactics in order to get the best out of guys. You know, you hear Johan Franzen and a lot of guys in the past talk about, what had been done and how they felt about him. So, again, me being always players first, I'll always back them. Again, Columbus is in a situation as an organization where they got to win, and they've been bringing in, you know, they had, I think, Tortorella, and then they hired Tortorella's assistant, which was kind of strange. Nothing against him. What was his name? They hired his assistant to be the head, and obviously that doesn't work out. So bringing in a personality and bringing in a coach like Mike Babcock to this situation, when they're in a situation where they have to win, and Jarmo Kekalainen, I'm sure, is on his last coach and his last leg. So this is a bit of a, you know, shot in the dark to make it work. And it could work because, you know, Babs, I'm sure, with his short shelf life, can always come in and help a team. Now, where Babs will struggle in today's game is he loves cutting off. He loves interference all over the ice. And that's why a lot of players hate paying for him, because you're not even looking to play hockey half the time. You're just looking to interfere guys or getting in their skating lanes. So the way the game's kind of gone over the last 4 or 5 years with boxing out and interference, leaving the game and cross-checking, it's harder to do that stuff. So I'm interested to see how he changes his coaching style in order to help his team, because that used to be in the mid 2000s when he was at the top. That's why his teams were so good. They played 2-1 games, 1-0 games. And I played for Bill Peters, who's his protege. All you'd be doing is skating all over the ice, cross-checking guys and interfering them. You wouldn't even worry about the puck half the game. So again, how does he change his coaching style to today's game in order to help his team win? I'm interested to see that, not only on the ice, but on the bench. Can he do it? Mike says no chance he can.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see it. I know Jarmo, again, is on his last legs, and I just said that, so I'm repeating myself, but
yeah.
It's a shot in the dark.
Dude, okay, here's the thing. You know when the hard-ass coach takes the World Juniors job? And they do the, like, hey, I can work with young guys, right? There's always that move. We've seen it. This was like a staple of the 2000s to like mid-2000s or 2010s. This is what this feels like to me with Babcock. Because you're like, they have to win. Well, they're in a kind of a good spot where the team is youngish. The expectations won't be insane. He does have some talent. The division is all right, I guess. It's not exactly impossible to think about Columbus moving up the standings a little bit, but their goal differential last year was -116. It's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. That's the worst in the conference by far. And yes, I know they were tanking for Bedard, but the only team that was worse last year in the entire NHL was the Ducks at -129. So they were one of the worst teams in the NHL. He gets to come in there, and they'll probably turn things around, and it's basically the junior job where he just has to be on his kind of good behavior for a little while and show that he's ready for the more modern game and the more modern player. And then maybe there's another job that opens up for him once he looks like rehabilitated. Like, I don't think he's going to be in Columbus forever and ever and ever. I think that this is a stopgap one way or another. And yeah, I don't know, man. What do you think? Columbus is going to be a winner in the next 3 seasons? I don't think so. I don't really see the path for that. So yeah, they just need to show improvement. Babcock gets to rehabilitate himself. He gets to do the World Junior move, you know, show up, play nice with the kids, and then accept the big job.
What's he going to do? You know, you look at the situation with Daryl, same, and I love the Sutter's been,
The Sutters did it. They're the ones that invented this move. This is their move.
Exactly. Yeah. Their shelf life is short, right? Yep. And they know it, and they come in and they expect and demand things early on. Johnny Gaudreau, doesn't necessarily play Babcock style. You have a certain amount of guys. Johnson, he went to Columbus now.
He escapes Sutter, and then he ends up here, and they're like, Babcock for you. And he's like, oh, I already did the thing. I already moved. I'm out of here.
It sounds like Carlson or Fantilli. I think Fantilli drops to three. So you're going to end, everyone thinks Fantilli's a center, and it sounds like he might not be actually a center. So does he fall into that slot? Now he's got to deal with Babcock. Yeah, maybe he can deal with it early on. And how does it happen in year two? How does it happen in year three? How do they like the style? How do they like the coaching? How do they like it all? That's where I'm interested to see. The bottom half of the lineup always will play hard for Babcock. It's the top half of the lineup. The Marchenkos, the young Russian kid who came in, and, he's starting to look good. But, all of a sudden he's asked to stand around in the D zone and interfere guys for half a game. How does that make him feel? So, again, I don't know what his coaching style is going to be within the new game. It's interesting, but you're right. It could be a stopgap for him. But for Yarmo, I still think there is some pressure on that staff in Columbus to turn this around faster than you actually think.
Yeah. No, I think that they need to show progress. I just don't know if the goal next year is going to go from being minus 116 to make the playoffs. Okay, so...
Well, these guys thought they were going to make the playoffs last year when they signed Gaudreau right off the hop.
Yeah. Whoopsie. That turned out to not be so close. Pretty far off at the very bottom of your division. So Panthers were off for 11 days. Do you think that really impacts a team like this where they don't have the pedigree, they don't have the experience, they're riding a heater, and then they walk into a Stanley Cup Finals after such a big layoff?
I think it affects them massive.
Yeah.
You have such a mojo going. You're beating the best teams in the league. You're playing a certain type of hockey that, the high flippers, it's kind of a live or die, and everyone talks about Matthew Tkachuk getting picked off, but every single guy on their team just flips the puck out of the zone and prays that the next guy gets it. So you're going to live and die by the sword doing that. But you have this mojo, and I think who it affects the most is actually Bob more than the team. And Bob is feeling it. He was dialed in. They play every other day, basically, sometimes every second day. So it's easy to get into a rhythm and feeling, and then all of a sudden as a goaltender, you got to take 11 days off, and you don't have that type of speed coming at you each and every day. And that mindset that you got to be in each and every day in order to be the best goalie or the best player. So I think it affects Bob actually more than it affects the players. I didn't think he was bad last night, but that's the player I looked at the most where that layoff would affect.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I just thought this is a tough break for them because they have the long layoff. Vegas doesn't have as long of one. They get to play. But also their experience, it's not the exact same team, right? They've got different guys in there. But they've got winners like Petrangelo that they brought in that are like the different dudes, like Eichel, okay. For the most part, Vegas has been there before. This team knows what this is like. They know the dance. They know the media stuff. I don't know, man. This feels like this could be a short series for me.
It could be. They're built well from the back out. And you talked about Aiden Hill. I think we talked the other day. How are they going to do with a goaltender like this? But all he's got to do is stop those outside shots. The other game, they gave up that breakaway at the end, and they gave up a couple grade A's that Nick Cousins saved. But overall, Vegas keeps guys to the outside, and they basically just ask you to stop the easy shots because of how well they defend the middle of the ice. So, you look at the back. Alec Martinez played 13 minutes. On any other team, on the Toronto Maple Leafs, he'd be the second-best D-man. And I'm not saying Whitecloud and Hag are better than him all the time, but that's just how much depth they have on that back end that Alec Martinez could be the least played defenseman on night one in the Stanley Cup Finals. Now, I don't know if he got hurt or what it was, but that's just how they do. They go with the next guy up who's going best, and that's who they play. I'm interested to see how they use their fourth line. They only played 8-9 minutes, and Florida, everyone always talks about Florida being a four-line team. They are not a four-line team. When they played in the Toronto series, their fourth line played 6 minutes. When they played in the Boston series, they played 6-7 minutes. And in this series, they're playing 6-7 minutes, where a lot of the other series, they're playing, the fourth line plays 8, 10, 12 minutes. And that's what that Vegas fourth line is used to playing. They played 9 minutes. But how are they going to use them in the matchup throughout the series when they're only using their fourth line for 4 minutes. I know they started them in the game, but that's going to be something interesting to see if they're not worried about any matchup at all and they just let every line go head-to-head with any Panthers line and they're not worried about it, and that seems like what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's why the series could be short, because they're four lines deep where the Panthers are not.
Yeah, I really like this Vegas team. It's already weird to think of them as like, oh, classic Vegas, but here we are. This is a pretty classic Vegas team. If you're involved in youth sports, you got a kid in hockey, you are a youth sports coach, you should absolutely download the Clever app. Again, it's free. It's Chris's. And yeah, it's absolutely blown up. And I know it's your baby and I know you're proud of it and people should go look at it. Again, 2-time Stanley Cup champion, Christopher Stieg. I'm sure I'll be talking to you soon based on when the Leafs make their next decision here. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, whenever you come through that Rolodex, let me know.
Okay? Yeah, it'll be a while. Number four, Christopher Stieg, the number four hockey guest to the show. I want to fit in. We'll probably do NBA playoffs in the pod only portion. I plan on doing longer off the top, and then we got distracted by my awkward Blake Griffin stories.
It was a good story.
Yeah. Blake Griffin... dunked on me, talking about a dunk contest. Yeah, so we'll talk about Jokic and the Heat and, yeah, the surprising elements of that game. Because, yeah, it was a really, really great basketball game last night. Mm-hmm. Really, and I thought for a little while that it was going to be an ugly basketball game, that was going to be terrible when Miami hit a bunch of threes early and then Denver stormed back. I went, poof, this is death. This is really bad. Thank God I actually almost tweeted, how the hell did we get Miami in the playoffs or in the NBA finals? And then they won the game. I was like, right, that's how. They're gutsy.
In the drafts.
They do this. Yeah, I'm glad that stayed there. Yeah, I like that Jobo that you brought up, how many games Patrick Waugh won in three seasons. I feel like people think that he was less successful there. At least I did. And yes, I know Brad Larson. But yeah, 130, 92, and 24 in three seasons with Colorado. Yeah.
One playoff run that they lost in seven.
It's an interesting thought experiment, but again, I think that the issue right now is that things are so volatile in Leafland and that there's so much to be done. The idea of bringing in a big-name head coach before you get things sorted with Matthews, before you get things sorted with Nylander, where you stand with these guys, it doesn't seem right to me. And so that's kind of what I think is bothering a lot of people about this Leafs offseason. And the departure of Kyle Dubas is, you go, yeah, okay, Tree Living can be a good general manager, but it doesn't really make sense to be bringing in a brand new general manager as all these things are in flux. That's kind of how it feels like with the coach is, do you really want to hire another inexperienced guy? Do you want to hire an assistant off someone's bench that isn't a big personality? Because it doesn't seem like the right time to swing for a huge name coach unless your players sign off on it. And I'm not sure that those guys, that's what they're looking for, unfortunately, right now. Anyways, let's take a quick break. I might have to fire Jobo. And, Best Bets next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Man, imagine meeting Patrick Waugh and Christopher Stieg is with you. And he walks up to him and he goes, nice to meet you, Mr. Roy. And you go, I'm not with this guy. I've never met him before. This is the first time I'm seeing him.
I came solo.
Whoa. That, you know me. If I hate any team, I hate Montreal. I love disrespecting the Montreal Canadiens. Just for fun. It's fun to have rivalries.
Yeah, sports hate.
Even though they can have all Trump cards. It's not even a rivalry. They think about Boston more than us because we're a joke. I might have to fire you, Jobo.
For what?
Well, okay, so my best bet, you're right. The list is long. But exactly. Okay, so I'm 17 of my last 20 best bets on here.
Mm-hmm.
God, Michael Porter Jr. screwed me yesterday, though. I was going to have such a great weekend. I was all over the Jays under. I teased it, though, which was annoying, and had the Blue Jays all weekend. I liked the Golden Knights in game one.
Yep.
And then yesterday, the only miss I had was Michael Porter thinking that he was going to go over on some props, and then he dogged it and barely played. But out of my 17-20, you have posted last week the only miss video.
I know. We do it every Tuesday.
It just happened to be the one. The one miss.
Let
me get dunked on by the internet. I will never forgive you for this.
That's terrible, Joe.
Anyways,
be better, Joe.
Bad luck.
Get on the Betano Best Bet early today. Best Bets are brought to you by Betano Sportsbook. The best sportsbook, in my opinion, in all of Ontario. Reach out anytime if you're interested in playing. I love an early game today. I'm going with the Rays first five. Mm. The Rays are excellent against right-handed pitching, which Bello is for the Red Sox. I just think they're going to rack up some runs against him, and it's McClanahan that's on the other side. And the Red Sox have been pretty mediocre against them. His track record is awful. So first five, Tampa Bay Rays, that is your Betano best bet. Head over to the podcast now for some hoops talk. Check, all right, welcome check. To the podcast. We were actually just talking about the time I went to Simon's birthday party. It was at Bangarang.
Yeah.
And I showed up, and this was like, what, 5 years ago?
About that.
And
it was, because it was my 30th birthday.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. And the man, by the time I showed up, and I was excited to see Simon. Mm. Like, we had never hung out outside of work. We played a lot of hoops together.
Yeah. Right.
And so I showed up at his party going like, oh man, I'm stoked to hang out with Simon tonight. And basically it was just his girlfriend holding him up for an hour before he
like
left.
A scarecrow in the corner.
I don't recall seeing you that evening.
He just kept smiling and giving people thumbs up.
Yeah. Just a happy guy. Dude.
Yeah,
happy to be there.
Well, the thing is too, is like he's tall.
I'm so a big boy.
You're saying you're 6'5", which is pathetic. That's all my tall friends said that is like a complete non-tall guy move.
Whatever.
But yeah, here's he looked like the wacky inflatable tube man, where it was like his middle section was being supported.
He kept falling over. Girl.
Yeah, it was great times. Got carried out, and it was goodbye. And then I ran into an ex-girlfriend, which was weird. And I went, thanks a lot,
for you.
Simon. Yeah, it was eventful.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really kind of sewered you there.
No,
buddy.
It was a random, and it was like, and it was one of those things where she was drunk, too. So I'm standing at the bar, and she just comes out, and she's like, well. I was like, no!
If it
God,
isn't
God, no!
Jamie.
Please, God!
If know? It isn't
no,
Jamie.
No, it was just one of those, too, where her friend is coming out to me. It's like, well, you know when she was, and that's awful. That's where you, that's hell. There's nothing worse than when girls gang up on you. And
you just have to leave. Oh. You have to go home.
Girls ganging up on you
is
the scariest thing that can happen to a man. When they start doing, and then when she said, and you go, oh my God, if I ever told my guy friends about the horrible things that girlfriends have done, like they would never recover, right? Like if the way women will talk with their friends about you, like full cutthroat, like you'll never speak to me again, and then we're still together. It's like, what the hell? No, your friends. And I tell her everything. It's like, maybe not your interpretation of events without me in the room the first time. Seems a little unfair, these characterizations that have been made of me, but
they're
that's
just painting a picture,
dude. And then you got to try to come back with the friend in terms of try to win her over. Yeah, like
but you told her the good things too, right? You told her all the good things.
No. What they tell, that's why flowers are good. They always like, he got me flowers. They say that. So buy flowers.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the amazing things about like guy friendships, though. Like there is, you never talk about anything meaningful ever.
No.
I do have meaningful talks with my guy friends, but it's never about my relationships. Like I don't keep that. There's nothing worse than the guy who talks about dating or like fights with his girl constantly. Yeah. Like, yeah, I prefer talking about things like what happens after we die.
Stuff
like that, like, you know,
or polar bears.
Yeah, that's good too. Polar bears is good. That's a good topic. That's a good topic, boys.
Yeah, sorry, when I was
not actually white polar bears, you know that?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
their skin is black underneath, and their fur is clear.
Yeah,
translucent
skin or fur. There you go. Hey, there that's polar bear talk for the guys, for the fellas.
There you
out
go.
There.
For
the
if you didn't know, they are murderers.
Polar
anyway.
Boy talk.
Polar boy. Yeah.
Okay, so hoops last night.
Quickly, before we get into this, by the way, we were talking a lot about Patrick Roy. Speaking of the Roys, we're in the post succession era.
Yesterday sucked.
Did that sink in? Because it hit me and my wife pretty hard. You're like, what are we going to do Sunday night now?
The only thing is that there was the basketball game.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm most excited by right now is watching the Nuggets. That's my favorite thing on TV. Mm. So I would have watched the Nuggets over Succession, and then it was pretty late. So it didn't hit me as hard that we had a finals game, and it was such a, you know, it was not a blowout. There was nothing. No. It was an entertaining,
game.
Awesome game that went down to the stretch. A Jamal Murray buzzer beater that misses. By the way, the only thing is there's always a bet on Betano of buzzer beater for the game.
Mm, yeah.
And it's like astronomically high odds.
Yeah.
And when Murray threw that up, I was like, oh my God, it's going to happen and I'm going to have missed out on that. That's how much of a degen I am. That's the only thing I hate about being a sports bettor at times is a moment I just get captured going, oh my God, I could have bet on that. Yeah. You know, like it doesn't matter how hot I am, which I am right now. You're just always greedy for more.
You don't even appreciate the moment. You just say like, oh, no. I could have made money off that.
Actually, that's why we got to be quicker with the pod today so we can get people to the McClanahan bet in case it hits. I feel very good. I already put that bet in. I already put that bet in. Yeah. Okay. So here's some final thoughts that I have. Number one, I can't believe the Heat won that game. Like, I'm astonished. Here's what I will say, though. Gutsy effort for the Heat. Mm-hmm. They're really an awesome team. I wish I liked them more because they're so anti what we've become accustomed to in the NBA, which is mega superstars with big-time players beside them, right? Superstars. Like, we see the Kevin Durant trade with Phoenix, and everyone goes, oh, wow, now they're the NBA favorite because Booker and Durant. And it's like, it's nice to see basketball be a team sport. But both these teams represent that. Like, the Nuggets, as great as Jokic is, the whole thing is the way that he's able to get more out of his teammates. I've said this. He's mega Steve Nash. He's mega Steve Nash, and it's so fun to watch him operate. But I wish I liked the Heat more. I wish I could just kind of get into the team, but it's just not. And
do you know why you're not getting into them?
Well, one is I do think that as much as Raptors fans want to make it like they have a rivalry with Boston, I feel like there actually is a little bit more animosity with the Heat. That's why I hated the Goran Dragic trade and the Lowry deal is like, why did Toronto trade for Goran Dragic? And at least he became a full-blown villain here that it just...
Within a day.
Yeah, I'll never forget that I tweeted when it happened. I went, why are we bringing this guy here? And I can't remember who it was, but someone tweeted me, you're going to love him in a month. And I went, there is 0% chance. I was very right, as always. Okay, so gutsy team, like the team.
Yep.
To win in Denver is incredible.
That's amazing. Yep. That's, yeah, that's... So
they're the first 8 seed in NBA Finals history to win a game on the road.
Yeah. Well, how many 8 seeds have there been in the NBA?
I'm sorry, it's pretty rare, but the fact that he did it to a Denver team that does not lose at home.
Only been one 8 seed to go to the NBA Finals, and that was in a lockout shortened season. 1999 was the New York
and they did
Knicks.
Not win on the road.
I was going to say. So, yeah, Armin. Did you just have that one holstered? Are you a Knicks fan?
Just shrugs.
Just a big basketball fan.
Just did the MJ shrug on.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm a big basketball fan. I don't just sit on stats like that.
Damn.
Anyways, Armin, put all the fellas on high alert here.
I got to set
everyone,
my game
yeah,
up.
I was going to say, everybody sat up a little straight. They were like, okay, I guess we're saying, here's a stat I know.
God, he's got such a deep voice, too, compared to me. It's so, like, emasculating.
You sound
like it's tough.
Yeah, Austin's back there. Hey, you got it. It's okay, man. No one can replace my gremlin.
In.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Armin did come in there. Forget that he's from the business world, you know? He's from the business. He's been out there doing business for the last 7 years, and now he just dropped into our world with his deep voice and his NBA stats. Okay. I stand by my thing, though, that this is going to be a short series. I actually think that Denver's going to go into Miami and kick their ass. Miami shot 48% from three in that game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
48% from three, and Denver was right there to finish it.
Yeah.
Like, they were right there. And I know, man, Michael Porter Jr., I bet on him. But he was a dog in that game.
Awful.
Michael Malone, he had that foul at the end, that N1 foul. Yeah. He hit Bam on the arm, which actually kind of turned out to be a play of consequence for them because they had to shoot the three.
Mm-hmm.
He just immediately, like the most pissed off I've ever seen, bangs that timeout, takes him, sits Michael Porter Jr. for the last couple minutes when they needed threes. Like they needed offense, and you have Jumbo Clay who can shoot over everyone.
Yeah.
That's what I will say is that people keep calling him Clay Thompson. Or tall Clay, not as good of a shooter, blah, blah, blah. And I go, this is outrageous. Clay Thompson was like one of the most consistently great defenders before his injuries that we had seen a long time. And Michael Porter Jr. last night, like...
Undisciplined.
This is what sucks about guys like that. When they're not getting involved in the play and on offense, he's just standing in the corner and he's not coming to the ball. He's not running those screens. And he just felt disengaged the entire game. He was making defensive lapses. He killed Denver in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he really, really hurt them.
Well, and like what you were saying, too, like it's weird to see a player disengage on the Nuggets offense because Jokic is the number one keeps guys engaged guy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, if you make any sort of cut or do anything with purpose, Jokic is going to hit you. And he was just like, Porter wasn't doing anything.
Well, okay, so this is the thing, though, too. This is why I just don't think Miami can win the series. And if it does happen, it'll be the most improbable finals win ever. Like, I'm sorry, it just is. I know that we could probably go through historically and look at some teams that were really big underdogs, but I just don't, I've been watching this game a long time. I don't ever remember a finals winner where I went, oh my God, this is so unbelievably shocking, the way that I would feel about this Heat team. Mm-hmm. Denver, what did they shoot from three? They were decent in this game, right? They almost shot 40% as well.
Yeah, 39.3%.
Yeah. But the big one was Michael Porter missing a bunch of shots. They only hit 11 threes, man.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, that was the thing. Miami just did a good job of making sure there wasn't a ton of wide open shooters in this game, and Denver did not do the same. Mm-hmm. And Miami hit a bunch of shots. Murray started cold. Again, Porter gave them absolutely nothing. He was a dog in that game.
1 for 6 from deep.
Yeah, he played 26 minutes in a playoff game at home. That's really an indictment of his play.
Yeah.
And they kept going. They got some really good minutes from the Bruce Brown, Jeff Green, Christian Braun unit for a little while, but then that ended up biting Malone in the ass because he stuck with Braun for a little too long in the fourth. Mm-hmm. He brought him back in. They were looking for that same magic, and it didn't really hit the same way. Either way, I'd like to see the spectrum stats on how many potential assists Jokic would have had in this game, but that's why I mentioned this a little bit earlier. I felt like Jokic had to score. And the way that they were defending him, a lot of times one-on-one, and then the help coming late, and his size against that team, he was presenting a just good offensive option. Murray started slow. Porter was awful. Those are their two guys. Aaron Gordon's not a creator for himself. When he has to put the ball on the ground, it's not very good. He can shoot in wide open three in the corner, and he's good at cutting. He's got decent basketball smarts with Jokic. He knows where to go. And then KCP is a wide open three-point shooter too, and he was only 1 of 3. And so it's like, They just didn't get any three-point shooting. Murray creates for himself. He hit three threes. Jokic, again, shoots fine. He hit two of them. But then you look around the rest of the roster, like from their other starters, they ended up getting 4 threes.
Yeah. And I wonder, like, I know that Spo obviously shut down Ramona Shelburne on the whole turning Jokic into a scorer thing, but, like, I do feel like
there was less help.
Well, and it was like they were, you know, the Heat were selling it to, like, prevent some of these good three looks, and that's where Jokic gets a lot of those assists. So, like, it's not like they were turning him into a scorer, but they were just kind of, like, selling out on some of the threes so Jokic couldn't pick up some of those dimes, and they were just like less good looks from deep, you know?
I think so too. I think it was a balance. Listen, Jokic is never going to have 4 assists again, so it doesn't matter if they try to turn him into a...
He had 11 potential assists.
Yeah. But that's still pretty low for him.
It is. Absolutely.
That's really low for him.
And Jamal Murray had 21.
Yeah. Huh.
Which is just an interesting optic to look at.
It's so funny because Jamal Murray fluctuates between... Like, he's such a good player. He's such a damn good player. But that first quarter, when you're watching him take these tough shots, and he's not big, he's bricking him, and you're going, this guy sucks.
Then he comes back in the fourth quarter.
And then he comes back, and he's amazing.
That's like 9 points in a minute.
There was nothing better in that game than when he got fouled hard by Strus on that breakaway. Yeah. And then Strus tried to extend the hand out to him, and he just gave him the, like, I'm disgusted by you look. Yeah. I love the animosity. I love that Murray took it personal, and I love that he's got that FU in his attitude. Like, I really do. I'm a big Murray guy. Anyway, I thought that the game script for that where, Jokic ends up with 4 assists, where he still is able to dominate you down low. Like, the way that I look at basketball is pretty simplistic a lot of the times. It's just like, which team gets their offense far more easily? Mm-hmm. And there are moments where the Heat, you go, how the hell are they going to score?
100%.
How are they going to do this? And it's, okay, so you got a red-hot Duncan Robinson who scored a ton of points at the beginning of the fourth quarter. Okay, you got Max Strus, who hit a bunch of threes. Jimmy Butler, who's not a good three-point shooter. Jimmy Butler has such an ugly shot at times when he just throws it up flat. It looks like a shot put.
He hit one at the very end, too.
And he hit a huge clutch three in the corner at the end of that game. It was just the offense that Miami got in the series just felt so unsustainable, whereas even though the Heat are being applauded for, great, you turned Jokic into a scorer. He scored 41 points, and it wasn't exactly very difficult. Like, how many of those Jokic shots? This wasn't that game against the Lakers, remember, where he hit the two follow-away threes?
Yeah.
This was just him getting deep post position, and then once he gets inside, once he gets to, like, the circle,
it's
a bucket. Over.
It's a bucket.
He has such a soft touch. It bounces in every single time. He gets friendly rims, but there's no one that can put a hand in his face.
Miami tried to put Cody Zeller in his face, and he just got barbecued.
But they have to put Cody Zeller. Actually, Cody Zeller gave them, like, actually some pretty good minutes, too, on the offensive end. He's just a smart player. And he got hit with the all-time rude fan chant, "You're ugly, Zeller." I heard it, and I went,
oh. Yeah, that was tough to listen to.
It's a tough hairline.
He's not a good-looking man, but he is 7 feet tall and rich.
Fourth overall pick from the Charlotte Hornets.
I was going to say, Armin, who are the guys that went after Cody Zeller when MJ took him, I think, four. What did he
fourth
take?
Overall.
Did he take him four or did he give him five? Because, yeah, that was a tough one. MJ
is pick number four.
Yeah.
In the 2013 draft.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
MJ had some tough drafts. Anyway, I just think Denver having another night where they only hit 11 threes.
I don't think that's happening, eh?
No. I don't think, like, everyone's going, Miami now has home court advantage, and Miami's just like, I don't really feel like that's going to be a thing against Denver. Mm-hmm. I don't think that they care. The altitude, I'm shocked. Again, I'm shocked Denver lost the game at
home.
That's
the big thing for me, too.
I really didn't think they would get one.
No.
Yeah, but I don't. Denver just has more guys that I trust. They have the best player in the series. He's at a position
player in the world.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
He's also at a position that is just really, really tough for Miami to handle. They've got, I would say that Denver has the two best players in the series. As good as Jimmy Butler has played at times, Jamal Murray's a better player than Jimmy Butler at this point in his career. Like, he just is. His playoff, Jimmy's having his moments. He does some good things, but yeah, Jamal Murray's, he's just good. He's really, really good. Anyway, I don't trust this Heat team to continuously make this long. I think that they kind of, I don't want to say fluke because that's rude to them.
Mm-hmm.
They played a really good game, but it was a fortuitous game. Mm. And Denver, despite playing poorly, having so many defensive lapses in that game, having just a couple of their players basically no show for them, and Miami hitting all those threes and playing kind of a pretty brilliant game for them defensively, like, everything fell Miami's way, and it wasn't a blowout. It was a three-point win with Jamal Murray having a really close three to put it into overtime, where I think Denver would have completely ran away with it. So, I don't know. I just get the feeling that if you're looking at odds and you're looking on Betano, if you can get stuff like Miami in five or Miami minus 1.5 in the series, I'd be definitely taking those bets into account right
now. Miami in five?
No, sorry. Denver in five.
Denver in five.
But Denver also minus 1.5 to mean that, like, this doesn't go to a 7-game series, like, that they win it.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think that this is going to get any better than 4-2 for Miami. I think maybe they win one more game, but that's it. I don't see it.
Crazy stat for you from John Schumann. Like, you know, obviously point differential isn't the best, but Heat point differential through 20 playoff games. First quarter, minus 1. Second quarter, minus 11. Third quarter, minus 12. Fourth quarter, plus 90.
That's what Miami has in their favor. For real, though.
What
Miami has in their favor is when it gets to be a slowed down game.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They are tough defensively. They don't give you a lot. And there is that aura of Jimmy Butler that just starts to happen where you go, okay, now it's Jimmy versus anybody.
And that's the thing, right?
You feel like you have a guy that it can match Jokic.
He steps up to the moment. Like, the moment is never, ever, ever going to be too big for Jimmy Butler.
It's weird, though. He's looked at times dead. Like, his legs have looked completely gone.
Well, it's because he plays like 50 games every regular season, and then he's like out there just...
Yeah, you're right, though. The Jimmy effect definitely takes over in games, and they have enough shooters, Miami, where you feel like one of them is going to get hot. Between Caleb Martin and
Gabe Vincent, Max Strews, Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, exactly. Those guys.
One of those guys is going to hit three or four threes.
But that's the thing about last game. They got three of those guys that were cooking.
Yeah, totally,
and
totally.
Duncan Robinson, right at the beginning of the fourth, had like 10 points instantly.
That's what I mean. So you got three of those guys. Also, man, just Denver was stupid in this game defensively.
Yeah, they were.
I just can't. I keep thinking about moments of the game, and I'm
KCP
going.
KCP had like two of those really bad fouls
KCP
on three-pointers.
Fouling Lowry.
Yes.
5 feet behind the three-point line, jumping out at him. And then complaining to the ref about it. Like,
as soon as I showed the replay, I was like, there's no doubt.
Dude, let Kyle Lowry shoot that three, man.
Yeah.
Like, especially in that point of the game. That was insane. But just the defensive lapses that they had, the amount of times that Miami shooters were wide open for clean looks, especially early on. Did you guys heard the mic'd up part where it was Mike Malone yelling at his team where he's like, the offense is going to come, guys, but maybe don't give them wide open looks to start a game like this where now they feel confident. You went from Max Strus going 0 of 8 or whatever to starting the game with three threes in the first quarter. Yeah. You go, what do you think that's going to do for them seeing the ball go through the hoop this way and getting easy offense? Like I mentioned earlier, one team gets offense easily, and that's Denver, because they always have the Jokic card to play.
Yes.
The way that Denver gives them offense is by doing Dumbo things. The way that they defended the Bam pick and rolls was horrendous in this game.
Yeah.
And the way that they defended the three-point line, and again, not to harp on them too much, but it was a lot of Michael Porter Jr. just sort of standing flat-footed and then going, wait, where am I supposed to be? And that's why Malone played him 25 minutes. Anyways. All right, let's hit on some of the what we missed topics here. Let's start with yours and the Jokic thing.
Yeah, so a guy dressed up in like a full Joker costume to go to the Nuggets game. Do you see that guy?
Of course. People wear the like jester stuff, right? They wear jester stuff, Joker stuff, which is pretty. It's kind of fun.
You know that guy was just saying like, "Why so serious all the time to people?" And anyway, imagine having to wear that.
If
home.
He did that, that's brutal.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
No,
that's the type of guy who would do
he
that.
He had to have at least once
Come
or
on.
Twice.
I think that's the kind
Wanna
of guy
see a magic
who did
trick?
It.
He's just like doing all the quotes. Oh God.
I would like to think that that guy was Joker for Halloween at one point, which a lot of guys have been.
Yeah. Remember that Office episode where everybody dresses up as the Joker?
Yes, exactly. That was such a hot costume.
Kevin and Creed.
Yeah.
And, so,
and Dwight, actually. Yeah.
So, but if I was at the game and the guy was yelling Joker lines dressed like the Joker the entire game, I'd think I'd be upset.
Calling security? Like, can we... But yeah, imagine having to wear that home after a loss. You're just like on Denver transport. Like
I was
going to
say, you have to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. You do.
You have
just on
to drive.
Streetcar dressed as
tinted
a Joker.
Windows, yeah. The whole nine
so
yards.
So if that was me, the second the game is over, I'm going to the bathroom. I'm washing my face in the sink. Even though I have face paint on, at least I don't look like the Joker, you know? Like yeah. I just look like a guy with washed off face paint. I have a hat. I'm bringing a hat and I'm throwing the hat on and then I'm just, you know, walking out. That's it. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
It'd be so tough. And it got me wondering, like, have you had any like bad fan moments while attending a live game?
Like me personally or people that I've seen?
Both.
The first thing that comes to mind is one of my friends passed out in a stall at a Senators playoff game. He was just gone missing for the entire game. And then
like he disappeared like in the first period and just,
well, he is really quite drunk. And then he showed up like much later in the game, pretty obliterated. I can't believe the usher like let him back down to the seat.
Oh, nice. Shout out to the usher.
Yeah. And I was like, where were you? And it was like, he was like, oh, I fell asleep in a bathroom stall. I was like, that's pretty classless. It wasn't even like an overtime game. Yeah. It was like the second period. Cause that's the thing. It's so weird. When you were younger going to some of these games, you felt like you had to pregame for hockey and it was at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so you'd be drinking hours before.
Crushing beers at like 3:30. Like,
yeah. And then living in Ottawa, I'd have to get on the bus.
OC Transpo,
and
baby.
You'd get on this bus and it would be an hour. So you would drink on the bus for another hour too. And so by the time you would get to these games, could be just flat out
by the time
gone.
Puck drop came around. I imagine
that's what I mean. And the thing is too is that was the flask era. You know, you carried a flask around, you thought you were like Peaky Blinders.
Tommy Shelby.
Yeah. And then you're just out there hammering a flask, doing shots, and then you're showing up the game like, oh god,
I can't see.
Yeah, this is before metal detectors. That's why I was like, well, I'm old. I'm like, how did I get these things in there? It's like, oh, very easily. Actually, one time, you want to talk about bad fan experiences, I didn't get into a Blue Jays game one time when I was younger because I had a bottle of Captain Morgan taped to my leg.
Taped to your leg?
Yeah.
Sick.
And I blew it. I choked because, again, you could walk in with, and this was just a move that we used to do, which is weird to think about now. But yeah, every game I used to go to, I had a bottle of Captain Morgan taped to my leg. This wasn't a one-off occurrence. I used to go to hockey games and like sporting events quite frequently in Ottawa, and I would have a little Mickey of Captain Morgan's taped to my inner thigh. And where I blew it was at a Jays game, and I wanted to go in the one entrance where there was a lady. Because I didn't think that, you know, it was like they're not giving you the most intense pat downs. Again, pre metal detector, where they would actually give you a little bit of pat.
Yeah.
Like everybody got a bit of a pat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stood in the line where the lady was, where my friend was. And then there was an open line beside me. And I probably gave off such sketchy vibes to the guy because he went like, you can come over here. I was like, I'm good.
Like not making
and
eye
he
contact.
Was like, yeah, now you are coming over here. And then he did it and he patted it. And then he made a move where he yelled something. I can't remember what it was, but he didn't yell like gun, but he did yell something like, oh, security or something. Like people had to come over and right away I was like, yo, this is just, it's just a bottle
overkill,
of booze.
Yeah.
But then the cops came and,
wow.
Oh yeah.
They got the cops on you.
100%.
Oh my.
The cops came. Yeah. They take your ID. They escort you off the property. Yeah. It's not a fun time.
You got fried.
Yeah. I did that at the Bills game this year and they just took my alcohol, my cigarettes and let me in.
Yeah.
Go
That's
America.
The real move.
Go
That's America. The real move. Yeah. I think like I had super long hair and I don't know. It's just that.
Do the nose rings?
I asked the
no?
guy, how'd you know? And he's like, you put it in your sock in front of me.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah.
Pretty drunk.
But so you had a Mickey?
I had a Mickey and I had a pack of cigarettes, and neither of them made it into Ralph.
Yeah, you're not allowed, stadium, you're not allowed six in, even if the pack is closed. And football stadiums. You got to have the clear bag, right? You got to have the clear bag. Yeah. You got to show them what's the inside the contents, and no cigs, no, obviously.
I do the little dickies now, JD. I put them on my belt buckle and I flip in my pants. That's the way to do it. That's the way to go about it now. Trust me.
I, like, the first football game I went to, I didn't know. And so the darts got confiscated, and I was like, this full pack, lads? Like,
it's America, bro. Yeah, only 10 bucks down here. Yeah. Whatever.
There 10 US dollars. Anyways, yeah, one for you. You have a bad fan experience?
Yeah, I had one.
I've seen drunk fans, but like, yeah.
Yeah, I, like, I remember. Well, so this isn't a bad. This
I've seen fights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw a guy get knocked out cold at a Senators preseason game.
Yes.
A preseason game.
Okay, sorry.
No, go for it.
Yeah, I've already told the story about being at the Paxton game where someone threw ashes on the diamond.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I've got some good ones. Actually, when you first sent this question, I was like, I don't think I have any. And I'm like, I have tons. I've been to a lot of games. Yeah, there was a guy at a Ottawa Senators preseason game. These two drunk guys, just being idiots. And at the end of the game, somebody threw something. And I can't remember what it was, but I think they just like meant to throw it at the glass or whatever. And it smoked this guy's daughter. And he just got up and walked right over. And the guy was like, not even paying attention. This is like, and I'm like, I'm situated where I was like, right beside the guy and the daughter who gets hit.
Right.
And then the drunk guys that were belligerent and annoying. And Senators preseason games, I'm sure Toronto has some too. They're the worst ones because it's like, now us poors can sit up near the glass and cause a scene, you know? Like, and so the guy hit him with a, hit his daughter, and the dad just walked right up just haymaker right in the guy's chin. Like, someone pointed at the guy, was like, that's him. And then that dad did not waste any time with confrontation. It was just like, and out you go. And his friend did nothing. He just stood there and was like, whoa, as his buddy got folded up in the seat. And then the cops came down, security, all that stuff. And you went, holy crap. But yeah, I've seen some good ones. I've seen some good ones at games. I've seen a couple fights in the stands. But yeah, that was those are my favorites. What was yours? Oh, wow.
So this isn't a bad one. This is just the funniest drunk fan interaction I ever had. I was at a Blue Jays game a couple years ago, and a guy left for like a half inning and came back reeking of darts. And he was so wasted. And he was like, bro, here's a tip. If you ever want to smoke a dart at a game, just go to the bathroom, blow it in the toilet, and flush it. Smoke goes right down. I was like, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that's how that works.
Dude, look at Austin back there, our king dart smoker.
That's not how that works. Oh, yeah.
Have you tried it, though?
No, I hate the people that, like, vape in their seats at the games. And it's like, you're agreeing to come to a public space. Don't smoke for 3 hours, man. You can do it.
Yeah, no, I do wish that they had the smoking sections back.
Best part of the Bell Center in Montreal is.
It doesn't really make. I don't really understand.
It's bad for you. You should encourage it. I agree with what they do.
I'm just saying that I think it's a little strange that they can't have sections when they used to always just have them. I don't really get it. Like, have it. Or just why it's so impossible to have in and out privileges on these things. I don't know. Someone smarter than me probably knows these things. I will say that when I'm at a game and I see someone take a little tug off a vape, I don't get bothered by it. But I would definitely see that if someone was just sitting there blowing clouds all game long and you're sitting there, I'd be annoyed, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Like, I just, yeah. So it's impossible for you to say, hey, this is allowed, because someone's going to ruin it for everyone. And at least, but I'm just saying, if you are discretionary and you are a vape person like a Jobo, then I would say that you're fine to take a little tug every once in a while, and I won't be bothered.
I just practice self-control, and I just don't do it.
JD, you missed an ultimate highlight this morning.
I was about to bring this up.
You've heard of mono, right? The kissing disease?
Yes.
Well, now with the kids, it's now called the vaping disease. Joe had mono from vapes. And the first time we'd ever heard about this, it was so funny.
Grade 12.
Our dorks, man.
In grade 12.
You guys are the biggest dork generation.
It ripped through the school.
It ripped through the school.
They're all sharing vape pens.
I absolutely love that.
Like, the one cool thing about mono, if you got it, was you might have not even gotten it from kissing.
But you got to say it.
But at least people were like, this guy kisses.
Kissing disease, yeah. Right.
This guy is laying lips.
That's right.
He is smooching.
Yeah,
and now for
like
you guys,
weeks.
It's just like, not only are you not smooching, not only are you just hanging out at home playing video games, playing, what is it? Roblox.
Roblox?
Isn't that what you play?
No.
Yeah, you play that. A child.
I never played Roblox.
I think you're going for a Minecraft there.
I think Minecraft is the game you're looking for.
Well, yeah. What's the difference between those two things?
They're two very different games.
Okay, well, there you see how Jobo is.
I didn't know Roblox was a game. Hand up.
Roblox isn't a game? I thought Roblox
was... No. He didn't know that Roblox was a game.
But is Roblox not a video game?
It is a video game. You're right. They're similar, but yes, they're not the same.
They're similar, though.
I would say that I kind of nailed this, fellas.
I think you nailed it.
You Minecrafting Roblox dorks. Kissing up on each other's vapes and never getting good kisses. Yeah, that sucks.
I'm not even mad.
Thank God I never grew up at that time.
I just want to add something really quickly. Remember that the Cody Zeller draft? Giannis was taken 11 picks later.
Yeah, that's an impossible. You can't judge that one.
I'm not saying that's like an indictment on MJ. I'm just saying like that's the irony.
My favorite
thing
about
that's
this
is
they went
draft too.
Cody Zeller, Frank Kaminsky back-to-back years.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. Maybe it's the Frank one that was worse. But the Giannis draft still did have some guys that went late. And
CJ McCollum went before him.
Rudy Gobert was in there.
Yeah, that's for a while, people thought Oladipo was the best guy from that draft.
Oladipo's in there as well.
But he was before that pick.
But beyond that, there's not a lot of guys.
Yeah. Okay.
The GOAT, Mike Muscala. Sorry.
Yeah. Mike Muscala.
The GOAT.
Moose.
Yeah, not a great one. That was the annoying thing for the Raptors. They traded their pick in that one for Lowry. And that's the ultimate Raptors what would have happened thing. Because
Steven Adams.
No, but Masai was going to take Giannis. Had he had his pick there, they would have taken Antetokounmpo at 12, which would have been before Milwaukee could have taken him. And I think the question is, would you have wanted things different where you never know about Kyle Lowry as the groat? You never get the Kawhi championship, but you roll the dice that Masai would have turned Giannis into multiple championships, and then you probably still have Giannis to this day. I think that's that's like the number one Raptors what if. There's no greater one.
Yeah,
there's no
that pick turned into Steven Adams then at 12.
That's a way bigger what if than what if they didn't trade T-Mac? It's like, yeah, no, Vince would have cried still and left and been a huge baby and then still gotten all of his way because all of you losers completely changed the narrative on Vince now. It's like, he was a good guy. And he just wanted to be here and he got screwed.
He
it's
loves
like,
the
no.
city.
Yeah, no.
Please come on if you're listening, Vince.
I watched the Vince Carter era. I remember it. He quit on this team. It was bad. He killed Raptors basketball for a long ass time. They got nothing back for him. And then we had to suffer through 85 retirement tours for Vince Carter and then 3 years of retirement Vince Carter commercials. It was way too much, man. The city needs to have some pride sometimes with sports. Fine.
Only other what if maybe is what if Kawhi came back?
What if Kawhi came back?
That's the only other one that's
No, that one's not a what if because they won the title if he comes back, Simon.
Yeah. Okay, of course. Sorry, my
bad. No, but that's the question. What if Kawhi? What are you talking about?
Thanks, Joe.
What if Kawhi comes back? They win a chance. This is Austin. Anyways, all right, let's do one more before we go. Let's get a little punchy right now. Everybody's talking about darts in the bathroom. all right.
One more. Okay. ESPN 30 for 30. Once upon a time in Anaheim, following the Anaheim Ducks and how that franchise was born and their squads of the early 2000s, the whole Paul Kariya. What do you remember about that era? And when that Paul Kariya game happened, the game six in 2003, did you watch that live? What were you thinking when that was happening?
How far does this thing, what was I thinking when that happened?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, we had no idea about concussion protocol was not the same. You got dinged up and you came back. Cause in today's era, we never get that sweet Paul Kariya goal.
Right. 100%.
And that was when
Gary
I found out
off the walls,
off the board, on the board,
on the board.
And then I would have, that was when I found out what smelling salts were.
Interesting.
Yeah, because they wake him up with the salt.
I watched that video. Yeah. For some reason, it pops into my head once every 6 months, and I watch it, and just the shot of him snapping back
out of it.
To life
is
crazy.
And that's what I mean, is I remember that time asking my parents or whoever, someone, what the hell that was, how they were able to revive him. that point in time, Scott Stevens was the scariest man on planet Earth.
Oh,
he killed everybody.
Yeah,
and
look in his eyes sometimes.
And the fact that he got him. But mostly what I remember about that run is Giguere.
Yeah.
Right. Like a 945 save percentage.
Everybody loves Giguere, but this was the sweetest thing. Who they beat first? No one?
They beat the Red Wings first. Come on, guys. 4-1.
And the best thing was...
The monkey?
Is it was the Cujo year.
It was the Cujo year. You're totally right. I forgot
Cujo
about that.
He
took over for Hasek.
He left. He left the Leafs, and he went to go to the Red Wings to win a cup. And then he lost to Giguere, who outplayed him in round one. And out of all my, I'm rooting against this guy.
You're petty sports rooting.
The hardest I think I've ever rooted for a team that was not a team that I care about was rooting for Anaheim against that Detroit team. And it just, slowly built where it was are they really going to beat this team? You know, because every win you'd go, oh, that's just fun that they beat them. And then it kept mounting, and then they knocked him out.
And, like, wasn't game one, like, a triple overtime game? And
it
like...
just, it was perfect.
They swept them.
Yeah. It was the best. And they embarrassed Cujo.
Yeah, and game one was triple overtime.
And 2-1. To this day, Cujo goes into the Vince Carter Hall with me where I go, dude, you left to go win. You did not think Toronto could win. You were right, but you still didn't win either. So, yeah. Anyway, I loved Cujo. He was actually, I would say, like childhood JD, all-time favorite athletes, Cujo was on the is in the top pantheon. Like when I was a goalie, you know, I first fell in love with like Potvin, but that was a little bit before my time. They got Cujo, and right as I was really becoming a hockey fan, and he was just my guy. Like I worshipped Curtis
the mask.
Joseph. Yeah, I wore a T-shirt with Cujo on it for a school photo.
Tight.
Because I was so into Cujo. Man, yes, that's awesome. I was obsessed with Curtis Joseph. Like that was my number one first hockey love, and so I think I've said this before. I know where I was when I found out he left, and I cried. Like, I full blown cried. I was so sad.
Where
I was
were
like,
you?
I was in a grocery store.
Grocery store. That's what.
Yeah, I was in a grocery store, and my friend told me, and I went. I was like, "That's cool." And then I went in the parking lot, and I cried like a little boy. Like
is his mask your favorite of all time? Then
no, I like all time masks is hard, and I'm a big mask.
Memories was sick.
Ray Emery's?
Yeah, no, had Mike Tyson on
Mike
it.
Tyson on it, yeah.
I hated those Sens teams, and I hated Ray Emery, though, so it's just like I don't...
The bias against
no,
it's
I do
there.
Think that it was so lame when people were like, how could you put a monster like Mike Tyson on
Potvin was a great one. Remember the McDonald's? Remember the McDonald's goalie mask?
I have them in my apartment.
Those were the coolest giveaways.
Yeah, one guy sent them to me. No, I think that... Yeah, I think that if I had to rank my... Like, Cujo's mask was amazing. God, it's so good.
I know.
And Balfour had a good one.
Yeah, but that's the thing is I would say that the top three for me still are Balfour, Cujo, and Potvin. Mm-hmm. And sneakily, I think I like Potvin's the most. It's just like
Potvin's
the most...
is sick.
It's just the most unique. It just... Yeah, it just stands out. It's gorgeous. I think I would go Potvin 1, Cujo 2, Eagle 3.
Mm. John Van Beesbrook had a good one with those Panthers teams.
Oh, there's been tons of great masks.
I'm actually looking at a list right now. All these are so old, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right?
What's happened to the goalie mask now? Yeah, it's
what
so standard now. Like, who's the best goalie
sick.
Mask in the league right now?
Yeah, Belfour's is amazing. Belfour's is absolutely amazing. I don't know who has the best mask in the game
In the current NHL, though. Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head.
I don't really know right now. I remember Ben Bishop had a cool moment with like the lightning ones a couple years ago. That's the last like one that I can remember where I saw a mask and I was like, oh, that's dope. Yeah. Nowadays, I can't really remember them.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you. You're right. Who has the best one right now? I know Cheevers' mask was like an all timer. Yeah, that one.
The scars or whatever.
Yeah,
the stitches.
The stitches. That's like an all time horror show awesome one.
Yeah.
And then I remember who else had a sick one? Who had the mask with it on it. I liked that one. You guys don't remember that? It was a Flyers goalie.
I don't remember that.
I think it was Steve Mason. He had a cool like ghoul one where it was like it on the mask and some other people. Anyway, I really did like that one. That's a recent-ish one that I really, really liked. No one found pictures of that yet?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Alex Lyon wore it actually when he was with the Flyers.
Yeah, I knew it was a Flyers goalie.
Yeah. And it was designed by David Gunnarsson. Yeah, it has it on the side.
Yeah, that one was cool.
That's creepy. Oh my goodness.
It's a ghouly. It's a very ghouly mask.
It's spooky.
Yeah, it's a spooky mask. I like that one.
He has like the it silhouette behind it too. Yeah. He's got the logo.
No, that one's
sweet.
That's
pretty cool.
That one's sweet. I think that's the thing is a lot of the masks now are way more subtle and no goalies have like, no goalies have just like sick nicknames anymore.
Yeah. That's a huge part of
Eddie
it.
Eddie the Eagle.
Yeah, that's great.
Or even
Cujo, but that's what I mean. Kolzig, Oli the goalie.
Oli the goalie is a great one.
Like, Oli the goalie.
And he had the Godzilla stuff.
How about the Bulin Wall?
That's what I mean.
That's a great nickname.
Who has nicknames right now?
Nikolai Happy Bulin just hacking darts in intermissions.
But and he had a wall on his mask, too.
Yeah,
you're right.
But who has a nickname?
I honestly can't think of any ones that are actually like
Bob.
Legitimately.
But that's
his shortened name.
But no one has like nicknames that are attached with who they are right now.
Yeah.
Unless it's like, something that has already been done before.
Bring nicknames back.
Yeah.
Bring goalie nicknames
back. Goalie nicknames back.
Come on. Enough's enough.
I'm like really trying to think about, Because it's just like guys get the same nickname. It's like they're all, yeah, like Campbell. You're just like, you're Soupy. Like there's no, I'm trying to.
That's so bad compared to Eddie the Eagle and stuff.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah,
I'm trying to.
Joe Soup.
do you think Cujo is the best nickname out of all the goalies? Because that's.
It's a good one.
It's pretty sick.
No, it's a really good one. That's what I mean. Felix Potvin was the cat.
Yeah, the cat.
Eddie the Eagle's also just sick.
Eddie the Eagle's awesome.
It's just like guys had nicknames. Now nicknames are dead. Bring back nicknames.
You know what? Only the goalie is a good one. Also, really quickly, because we're going too long, I'm assuming.
We're way too long.
30 for 30. They did a, because that's what the Anaheim one was, right? A 30 for 30.
Yeah, yeah.
They also did a American Gladiators 30 for 30. Mm-hmm. I was catching some of that. Were you an American Gladiators guy?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh, man. I was seeing highlights the goalie of Powerball.
See, I never saw it that way. Like, I never watched it live. So I'm actually, something like that to me is just, I'll be going in completely blind. I have nothing.
Lucky.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. Yeah,
I was seeing Nitro and Blaze and Malibu, and I was like,
you know them,
my boys.
Nitro and Blaze. I like Malibu as a guy. That's
he
a good.
Did the hang ten.
Yeah, of course he did. Yeah, that's pretty sweet. And yeah, no, Olaf Kolzig being Godzilla too. Like he was a double nickname. He was Godzilla. Like that's the thing. Everybody had their. It's like wrestlers. Same thing. Wrestlers used to have gimmicks, and now they're just a guy. Anyway, we got to run. Subscribe to this podcast. Hit me up if you want to play on Botano. And yeah, we'll see you tomorrow.